difference between what it means to be good when you're trying to be epic. No, you don't gotta believe in me. Nothing can stop me. I already said it. I'm taking everything they stole from us. Yeah. You got your problems, I'm a whole nother. I'm giving people something to believe in. I'ma show them freedom like a bow cutter. We gon' fight back. Yeah.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Last Call. Last Call with the alcohol only on. It is the Blue Wire Hustle Network. And join me on the line, this man here, well, he only had one fight in 2020, but he's hoping 2021 is a much better process. He'll be taking on Pedro Munhoz to January 30th, all the way at UFC Fight Night 186. And, well, he's hoping to also get some momentum going and get one more crack at the bantamweight title. I give you once again the pride and joy all the way from Team Tiger Shulman. I give you it is, well, fighting El Terror himself. I give you Jimmy Rivera. Jimmy, so the good news is you get to celebrate Christmas and Thanksgiving. Bad news is you can't go ballistic because you got to fight in January. How much does that change everything in terms of celebrating the holidays? You know, you and the wife having people over for Christmas and having to literally make sure of not eating too much.
Yeah, I mean, having people over, I don't think it's a, with the whole COVID thing, you know, some of my family's high risk, so it's not really something we've been really concerned about. It's just, you know, I can't eat as much as I would love to eat, you know. That's what sucks, but it is what it is. And it, it's not, won't be the first time and hopefully not the last time that I'll have to suffer during the holidays.
Pedro Munhoz, it's a rematch fight. The good news is you beat him before. That was 5 years ago. Bad news is you guys have changed. Both of you guys have gone different directions. You both have become different fighters. What do you expect? How tough is it fighting a guy that, you know, your ego's saying, hell, it's easy. You beat this guy before, you'll do it again. And but yet you know he's no longer the kid you faced in Brazil those 5 years ago.
I mean, I never take anybody lightly. And with that said, yeah, he's going to come out. He's obviously going to go for the win, but it's not like I'm taking him lightly. You know, that's when I've learned early in my career, you know, you take someone lightly, thank God I still got the win, but, you know, it's just the wrong thing to do. And at the end of the day, it's not something you want to do. So I'm not taking lightly at all. And I'm looking forward to getting back in there and fighting. I mean, it's been a little while. I wanted to get something a little sooner, but just didn't work out because a lot of the guys were tied up. So now with this opportunity, I'm looking forward to it.
How tough was it, you know, the last couple months where you're probably calling up everybody and saying, oh, you know, I want to fight, I'm ready to fight. It's like, no, Cody's busy. Aljamain is waiting on the title fight. Cody Garbrandt's injured. Brett Johns left. I mean, at what point were you like, I don't care who I fight. Just give me somebody just so you can get some money in the bank account.
Nah, I'm just being patient, to be honest with you. I wasn't really worried. I would love to get back in a little sooner, but it is what it is. A lot of guys were either tied up or they were hurt in the top seven or eight. So, you know, I was told that, you know, I could fight Pedro, but the fight would be, I was supposed to fight him a little sooner, but, you know, I was told that he needed some more time. And I said, all right, no problem. And I just kept training and just waited for when the date would be. Actually, I was told, you know, sometime in November. And then I was told again, you know, he's the only one open and can't do it in November, but we could do it in January. I said, okay, all right, no problem. We'll do it in January.
How much has he changed from looking at tape, from looking at stuff, you know, recent fights, let's say the Edgar fight, the Aljamain fight, how much has he changed as a fighter from the first time you saw him?
I definitely think he's gotten a lot better since the first time we fought, but it's a two-way street, and I feel the same way. Like, I've got better too since the last time we fought. So I think it's going to be a great fight because we both like to stay in the pocket. We both like to throw. You know, I watched him in his Frankie fight. I told him, I actually messaged him. He's, you know, a really nice guy. We've talked here and there. I thought he won the Frankie fight, but I guess the judges thought something differently. And I told him, looking forward to running back and us fighting again. I had a blast fighting him. I didn't have a blast fighting him in Brazil because obviously they didn't like Americans there, but I'm looking forward to getting in there and running back with him.
We're going to go back to this fight in a bit, but take us back to your last fight. It was a bounce back win over Cody Stamann. What went right? Did anything go wrong? And how tough was it afterwards, the fight, when you learn everything, when it hits you of what's going on, and, you know, the human element gets in the way, it seems.
I mean, fighting Cody Stamann was a very last minute thing. And, you know, I was excited to get back in there. I was excited to get my hand raised, to be honest with you. Would I like to have been a little bit more of a war and toe to toe? Yeah. But, hit him with a couple shots and he didn't really stay in the pocket, and there's nothing you can do. It's not much you can do if the guy isn't staying in the pocket, you know?
When did you realize that he didn't want to do that? Because you enjoy when it's a close quarter fight, when you can get in there, use your boxing. When did you start realizing, like, okay, he's going to try to maybe get me to just follow him around and catch him with counter shots? Like, when did you realize that you had to sort of go to play B?
By the second round, when he wasn't as engaged as much, he was just sticking mainly to wrestling. I feel like that's when I started noticing that he was, didn't want to engage as much.
How good did it feel fighting fly featherweight for a change? You know, not have to cut that.
Dude, it was great. I didn't have to cut any weight.
I can imagine that, because that's, you get to train, you get to do more weightlifting, more, you know, strength conditioning. Well, you
have to worry about it was a last minute fight, so I had to cut some weight, but it was a last minute fight. And with that said, it was like a 5-day notice fight. I took it.
I gotta ask, why take those fights on short notice? I mean, was it because of just wanting something?
I lost my last two fights, so it was like, you know, it's not really pick or choose. You know, the UFC asks you to fill in for something, and, you know, at that point, it's like, at that point, you just got to say yes and get in there. You know, I lost my last two fights. I needed to get a win. I thought Cody Stamann would be a great fight to bounce back.
If you're just tuning in, ladies and gentlemen, once again, we get Jimmy Rivera here on the show. We're talking all things, of course, his fight with Pedro Munhoz, which once again will be on January 30th. We're talking about his big win over Cody Stamann last time out here. It's a close community. You guys know, you know, a lot of what goes on. You follow, get what happens here a bit. Afterwards, you know, Cody basically, you know, his brother had died a while back. He had been fighting just, you know, as he said, to sometimes not think about it. How tough is that afterwards when you see him and you're having an emotional dump, when you see him in tears, and it's like, you know, it does suck. I'm glad I won. I'm happy, but you know what he's going through. And you've seen, I'm guessing, you know, there's that part you feel bad that he had to go through all this while he's training for the fight.
Well, I mean, we both took it on last minute, and when his brother died, it was right before the Caraway fight. So that was tough. And, you know, I gave my regards after the fight we were done, but I mean, he knows as well as I know. It's like, you know, I'm going to get in there. He's going to try to take my head off, so I got to try to take his head off. When you get in there, it's all business, and it's a fight at the end of the day. So, obviously, sorry for his loss, but, you know, I did, you know, did tell him sorry. And after that, you know, going in the fight, it's not something you think about. All you focus on is the fight at hand, and that's it.
No, I get that part. I'm saying, how tough is it though when you know afterwards, like, everything he's gone through? It's like, and it's, as you said, it's business. You get in there, you fight, nobody cares about it. But you at the end of the day know there's a lot that goes on that you guys don't tell about, whether it's you're having trouble at home, whether there's injuries, whether, you know, families are sick. And it's just basically suck it up, buttercup.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's really just like you said, suck it up and fight, and that's it, you know? There's not much leeway, man. You just gotta be mentally tough and go in there. And a lot of these guys that fight, especially in the UFC, have that mental toughness. And Cody Stamann had it. And you just gotta go in there. You gotta do your thing, and that's it.
How tough is it for you guys to always have to sort of not tell what goes on? Because as we said, you know, fans don't care about that. They just want, can you fight? You know, you're a caveman, that's fine. And yet, I'm guessing there's been times, you know, this last year for you, it's been difficult when you've probably had family who've been sick due to coronavirus, or you've had family members who are suffering because they've lost work. All this is going on. You feel like crap because you can't help them out. And it's like, nobody cares. How much does it bother you sometimes that we don't give you guys that sympathy we give other people? We just expect you to go out there, fight, and oh, that's all, you know, we don't care about the rest of the stuff that goes on in your lives.
I mean, it sucks, but I guess for me, I'm kind of used to it. I don't really care what other people think. I care what, you know, my family and my wife and the people close to me think, but, you know, I never asked for, I guess you want to say, I never asked for sympathy or pity, but I always ask, you know, to understand. So, if, you know, fans don't understand, that's one thing that I'm not control about, but like, if something's going on in my life and I can't make the fight, especially something's really bad, at least the UFC's there and they understand that, all right, no problem. Let's push it back a month or two or do this to help out. So I think working with the UFC and them understanding, that's important. But fans, now, I don't care if they understand or don't understand. You know, at the end of the day, they're not like going out and having a beer with them. I'm spending time with my family.
It's a while back we had Ricardo Lamas on the show. He talked about there gets a point where you start thinking about retirement because of everything. It's not just wins and losses. It's you start hating having to go and train. You start, you know, not looking forward to stuff because you're missing time with your kids. You're leaving, you know, a lot of things behind here. You're very happily married. You have your dogs. I know that you love this sport. Are there days, though, where you're looking at going, you know what, I want to start having a family. I want to have kids. I want to be able to not get out of bed and feel like my body's just went through a car crash here. I mean, how do you keep the love of MMA when it's a brutal sport, both inside and outside the cage, and it can literally just bury you at times?
I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, I love the sport. I grew up in martial arts, so it's kind of like having that discipline. I mean, sometimes, you know, you have those days whether you have a fight coming up or you just have to fight life. So it's one of those things that, like, I guess you could say as a young, you know, man, a boy, I've learned how to, you know, to beat those tough days and get my ass out of bed and go out and work and train or whatever it is I need to do. I mean, you know, I do a lot of things besides, like, you know, besides fighting, teaching, working with police officers now, especially what's going on, helping them being able to defend themselves, and biggest things really, you know, teaching them confidence. So when they go in a situation, they don't always have to resort to deadly force. So there's a lot of things I do. I think it's just, it's all a mindset at the end of the day. If you have a strong mind and you have a lot of achievements in your life, you have a lot of confidence, it really helps with everything else. And, getting out of, you know, it's always a fight getting out of bed. It's whether you're going to do it and get up and get where you're at. I mean, it's not any harder than, you know, saving and having kids. You have kids, baby's crying. You got to get your ass up and take care of that baby. You know, like, it's a part of life. It's a way of life. It's just everybody handles it a little differently. And some people can't handle it the best. Some can, some are like in the middle. Everybody's different.
Last question before I let you go. You mentioned the working with the police officers, helping them learn not just new tactics, but ways to find that mental zen, to not, you know, get provoked. How easy was it just to resonate with them and relate to them? Because in a lot of ways, MMA fighters are like cops. You always have somebody who wants to just get in your face. They want to show how tough they are. I give them a couple of drinks and they think, hey, I could be a bad Jimmy Rivera. I played high school football. And as much as you love to just, you know, I'm guessing there's days you'll just grab him, slap him on an arm bar, and we'll make him start crying. You can't. It's just not the way the society doesn't work. So how much do you enjoy helping these guys out who, for a lot of them, it's like, okay, what are we supposed to do? How are we supposed to handle this here? How do we handle people who, especially today, seem to just not have respect for law enforcement and just proper decency?
I mean, it's a great thing to be able to help them out and teach them. You know, the biggest thing is them understanding that they can control someone without using submissions and locks, being able to use their body. You know, I'm out in Jersey, so you're still allowed to be able to do simple things like mount, knee on belly. You know, a lot of those things they took away from New York cops. So if you take away where you can't mount someone or back mount someone to hold them,
If you take that away, so what do they have left? They have their spray and their gun. Like, you're making them resort to deadly force. You're doing it on purpose. It's like one of those things sucks. But for me to be able to work with them and to help them out, it's obviously a great thing. I love it. The guys are great I'm working with. It's really been a beneficial thing on both ends, me learning the ins and outs, and for them to be able to go in a situation with a lot more confidence. And you're always going to have people, you know, I know a lot of guys, and especially Elmwood Park I work with, they're really great. And a lot, you know, you always kind of people are going to test you, but it's a remarkable to see these people who, you know, never had, you know, some of them don't have an MMA background or a martial arts background, to be able just to keep cool, calm, and collected, and just be like, yeah, listen, man, calm down, you know, like, just it's a really crazy thing, and be able to see the situations and talk to them about things that go on and what they do and different things. It's really like it's not an easy job. There's a lot of room for error. They're humans just like other people. You do have some bad apples in the group, and hopefully those apples get weeded out with everything going on, because, you know, obviously you don't want that. I know in Elmwood Park, before all this stuff was happening, you know, Chief Foligno, he basically, like, you know, if someone wasn't really part of it, you know, he started talking to them, like, listen, you got to change it. You can't be being like, you know, be like this. So it's a really good group of guys that they have there. And to be able to help them, and be able to help them go in a situation where they don't need to use deadly force, where they could just be able to control the person by, you know, mounting them, putting the hooks in, grabbing the wrists, and talk with them, tell them to calm down, is a huge thing. You know, their first thing they learn is how to de-escalate. You know what I mean? You know, I think it's called voice shoot. I always mess it up. It's like basically like talk judo, where you're just bringing the person down. You're not going in there and screaming at them. You're just, hey man, come on, relax, listen, let's talk about it, what's going on. Where you have some cops go in there and just, you know, just want to fight, but, you know, once you bring it way up, how can you bring it back down? You can't. So the first thing is teaching them how to do it. Second thing is that if it does happen where you're calm and you're trying to talk to the person, trying to bring them down so they don't harm themselves or anybody else, and it starts to get physical and they're not calming down, then you have to know what to do. And the fact that they're learning what to do, it just makes them already ahead of the game. And, you know, I think a lot of things with the police officers that they don't do enough training, and it's not really about defunding them. It's about really giving them more training. You know what I mean? And giving them these programs that I designed with Chief Foligno, where we could teach them and they can understand, you know, that they don't need to resort to deadly force, that they don't resort to chokes and stuff. They could just use their body to hold someone and control them. So it's been a great experience, and we're still working every week, every month. They're mandated to train with me and Chief Foligno. We do it together, the class, and it's going great.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, he's basically all over the place, doing so many jobs that you can shake a stick at, but they'll be fighting once again January 30th, only at UFC Fight Night, against Pedro Munhoz. I give you once again El Terror himself. I give you Jimmy Rivera. Jimmy, once again, before we let you go, where can the fans check you out at? Where is the Twitter page, Instagram, the website? Where can fans hit you up at?
Instagram is Jimmy Rivera, and then Twitter, it's Jimmy135. And, you know, anybody can message me, hit me up, let me know, comment on something, and I'll talk to them always, you know. Whatever time I have, I always – you know, it might take a little bit, but I always have a lending ear, you know?
Jimmy Rivera, ladies and gentlemen, once again, we're proud to have him on the show. We can back vote. We got a whole lot more only on It Is Last Call. Last Call with the Alcohol, only on It Is the Blue Wire Hustle Network. Welcome back, everyone, to It's Last Call. Last Call with the Alcohol Only on. It is the Blue Wire Hustle Network. You know, joining me on the line, well, we earlier heard from Jimmy Rivera, wishing him best of luck in his upcoming fight here. We're going to be talking a lot here about the European promotions because, well, while everybody talks about UFC, Bellator, PFL, it's still a global sport. Well, I got to bring in my guy here who, as we said, he knows everything about mixed martial arts in terms of all over the world. And when he wants to be worldly and global, you got to bring this guy on here and give you once again the co-owner of MMA DNA NL and the Dutch events administrator for Tapology. I give you, it is Amsterdam's finest. I give you Marcel Dorf. Marcel, let's start off here with, as you said, COVID played a lot of tricks on a lot of companies, a lot of organizations were in flux. In Europe, there was the big three once again, KSW, ACA, and Cage Warriors. Let's start off with ACA. They lost a lot of fighters. They had some events. They're getting money put in by a guy who, say what you want, he seems to love MMA, and I guess it's the only good thing you can say about him. How do they look right now? How do you grade ACA in terms of what they did and what they went through?
Yeah, I think very strong. I mean, it's if you ask me, it's one of the deepest rosters that are in MMA right now. And they really have some talented fighters. They did two shows, just more like over a week ago, back-to-back, like in 5 days. Really good shows, some talent over there. There's now a little bit of a problem, I heard, from the American fighters can't fight anymore there or something because there is some legal stuff going on with the owner of ACA. We all know what's kind of happening there. I don't know the exact details, so can't go in onto that, but they have some solid talent over there, man. I mean, what can I say? I mean, if you have never watched an ACA event, definitely check it out, because if you haven't watched an ACA event yet, you're definitely missing out. You got some crazy jiu-jitsu here and there, some very fun scraps, fun fights, and some vicious knockouts. It's really a good promotion, and you see fighters that came from ACA, for example, Magomedov, who made his debut in Bellator recently, Zabit Magomed Sharipov, Piotr Jan is a champion in the UFC right now. I mean, there are a lot of good fighters coming from that organization, and it's really, really high-end MMA. So if you want to watch, check it out for once, and I think you will be hooked.
How impressed are you that, as you said, they lost a lot of fighters? I mean, you would go over the roster and you're looking at just alone, Bellator, it seems, stole a lot of guys from them. Several of their light heavyweights seem to have been, pilfered by Bellator. You said Magomedov, a bantamweight, signed by Bellator. Even you can argue, guys, UFC has pilfered them. How do they do that? I mean, how do they literally just are able to replenish the ranks, even though you have, it seems, Bellator and UFC just every time they want, an established talent, let's go to ACA, we'll sign them, and they end up doing that.
I mean, it's in their blood, man, the fighting. They come from a tough background, they have had to fight all their lives, fighting is in their blood, and they are like from kids. You see those Khabib videos with wrestling with bears. He's not the only one wrestling with bears, I mean, it's just a culture they're growing up in, and they are very, very strict culture with some rules, so and it's pretty much, if you're an MMA is about respect, it's about discipline and all that, and they have that, so that's already an advantage they have with, for example, guys who come here from Europe, Russia is Europe, but there's a difference in the way of raising your kids, I think. I mean, Russia is more strict, the parts they're coming from, and over here it's not, so they kind of have an advantage with that, and if you wrestle from when you were five, you're gonna be pretty tough, so there will be always talent over there, man. I mean, you see it keeps growing over there. Also, the American promotions finally taking note lately. I mean, the last couple, 4 or 5 years have taken note. Before that, there were like really little Russian fighters over there, you know, but now it's like booming, and they're basically, I don't want to say they're taking over, but they're doing really well so far. So yeah, I mean, they will keep coming. They will definitely keep coming.
How much does it affect them that, and let's face it, as you said, they keep winning, they keep doing everything here, they keep, you know, finding fighters, but this December 2020, the U.S. Department of Treasury announced sanctions against ACA and Akhmat MMA due to the ownership by Ramzan Kadyrov, who, if you're an American, he's a Chechen dictator who, not the nicest person in the world. I'm trying to be as politically correct as I can. They've sanctioned him heavily. All American fighters can face jail time or fines if they fight for organization. Right now, I'm looking at the rankings. Your champion at heavyweight for ACA is Tony Johnson Jr. He will probably leave. Corey Hendricks, another American who's at top 10 at light heavyweight, he's gone. We're not even sure what that means for countries, you know, like Brazil, Western European countries. How much does it affect ACA? And how much do they just look and go, okay, well, this sucks, but we will evolve. We'll move on.
They will move on, man, but it will definitely affect. I mean, you have also like a guy like Brett Cooper who was supposed to fight last week, but the fight got pulled. No reason behind that, but I think it has to do with it. So I think it definitely has consequences, you know, if some of your good fighters are American, you know, and so they probably can't fight there anymore. Like you said, their heavyweight champion is Tony Johnson Jr. He recently won the belt against Daniel Omelianchuk. But, I mean, besides American fighters, they still have some solid fighters. The Brazilians can still travel to there. They have the Russian fighters themselves, you know. And there are still a lot of countries who are booming right now as well, like Kazakhstan. They have Kazakhstan fighters. They have from Tajikistan. By the way, Yakshi Muradov got also signed by Bellator. That was the light heavyweight champion. So, but they still have a lot of fighters, but it's hard now for them to go like worldwide if you can't have American fighters over there. But I think, I don't know what's going to happen with them, but obviously if they're going to get punished when they get back to the US, I don't think they will fight anymore for them, which sucks for them, you know, but we'll see what's going to happen, man, in the future. They haven't got anything planned for 2021 yet. So let's hope we hear something in the upcoming days.
We can go back to ACA in a bit. Take us to the other organization though in Europe, which they seem to be doing as, I don't want to say as good as the ACA, but I think maybe on par, and that is KSW. For those who don't know, it's Konfrakta Zuk Waliki. It is a Polish organization. If you have not heard of them, well, they're the organization that has produced current UFC light heavyweight champion Jan Błachowicz. They produced a guy who you might have also, you know, heard of in Matsman Gamrud, who also left for the UFC. What makes them so special, and how much have they been helped by the fact of, with UFC and Bellator really not doing a lot of European shows, more Europeans, it seems, are now going to KSW, going to, you know, Cage Warriors, going to ACA, because it's a hell of a lot easier to travel there than to the United States.
Yeah, they have a beautiful mix of really good fighters, some, how do you say that? So guys like Pudzianowski, who everybody knows is like 5 times strongest man of the world, you know, and he's very popular. And they are just a really high level MMA show in total, you know. Their production value is great, you know. People love those the way they present it to the viewer. They have great champions like Roberto Soldic, Saladin Parnas. Now Mamat Khalidov is a champion again, man. Dude is a legend. He won against Scott Askin last time out via knockout. Tomas Narkun, Phil De Vries. I mean, they have some solid fighters over there. And we also saw some fighters going to the UFC. Like you said, Jan Błachowicz, for example, is now the champion in the UFC. Don't forget Mateusz Gamrot, who signed with the UFC, Dricus du Plessis. There are some really good fighters over there, and they keep doing very well. I think they're something special. I mean, and don't forget Ariana Lipsky and Kowalkiewicz. They also were both champions, and they're in the UFC now. But it's a very special. You can't compare them to ACA or Cage Warriors. I think they are something special, KSW, and I think they put up some great events, and I always look forward to watch them. It's really a fun event to watch, even if you're not if you're not familiar with KSW. It's the same. I don't say it's comparable. It's not comparable, but it's like the same with ACA. Please watch an event for once. You'll be hooked probably because it's fun, it's entertaining, and there's some good fighters over there.
How much does it help that, and I say this here, one of the best fighters in the world, if you follow mixed martial arts, and you do, has never fought in the UFC. He's always been KSW, and that's a guy by the name of Mohamed Khalidov, who he's up there in age now, he's 40 years old, but you know, as many people said, when for the last decade, he was steamrolling over people. Matt Lindland, Kendall Grove, Melvin Manhoef, Brett Cooper, Luke Barnett. I mean, he was just not just winning, but destroying people at middleweight. And this is a guy who turned down the UFC. They tried signing him, didn't work. How much does that help KSW that they've been able to, when they develop these stars, keep them? It's not like they're a feeder program. It's not like they're being just, you know, developing these guys and they watch off his belt or UFC pick him off. They're keeping their guys for some reason, and it's pretty damn impressive.
Yeah, it's good as well. I mean, with the Khalidov, I blame the UFC with that. I think they offer him a really low pay to get to the UFC. He was one of probably the biggest star over there at that moment. So it didn't make sense for him to go to the UFC and to get a huge cut in his pay. So he didn't do that. But it's a good thing. You know, they... there's some solid Polish fighters over there, but they have also like Roberto Soldic. I think honestly, a guy like Soldic and Parnas, I know Parnas recently signed a new contract, I think, but I think if they defend one or two more times, they will definitely go to a UFC, for example. I mean, it's going to happen eventually, you know, but they will keep having some solid fighters over there who are doing very well. So it's just a very good marketing thing they have going on. Definitely in Poland, they are huge. You remember that huge event? I don't know when that was, I think in 2017, when they sold out the arena with 58,000 people. I mean, that's crazy for an MMA organization, not being the UFC or Bellator, but KSW, a Polish MMA organization in Europe. I mean, that's huge. And that means that you can see how popular they are and deservedly being popular.
How much does it help also that they'll co-promote with other promoters? And I say that you have, you know, KSW fighters fighting on ACA cards. You have Cage Warrior fighters fighting on KSW cards. For some reason, they make it work. I know, but, you know, but Dana White and looks at co-promotion and goes, but how is it that KSW, ACA, and Cage Warriors all find a way to go, you know what? Yeah, we're all trying to get, you know, a lot of money. We're all trying to be the dominant group here, but we will work with each other. We'll even do co-promotions between all three of us.
I think they don't really compete with each other, right? They're just trying to put up a good show, and they want to be, definitely want to be the best in their region. But their regions are not really crossing each other. Yeah, maybe a little bit ACA and KSW, but Cage Warriors is more based in England, Ireland, just the UK, you know. I know they want to expand to the US in 2021, but I mean, the UFC is like, the UFC sees themselves, and rightfully so, as the pinnacle of the MMA sport. I mean, you got to give it to him. It's that true. Even if you don't want to agree with it, you know, I know many people don't want to, but it's just the truth, you know, and they are not going to co-promote anything or anything they want, you know, because they think we are the best. We don't have to co-promote. They need our help. We don't need their help. And that's the thing. When you're at the top, you don't have to do that. You know, you also remember back in the day when Dana let Chuck Liddell fight in Pride because he wanted to show he had the best light heavyweight. And that was at the moment when the UFC wasn't the premier MMA organization, but Pride was, you know. So it just depends on who is the premier organization in the world. And if you're the premier organization in the world, you don't have to prove it, you know. And if you're not, you want to prove it. So that's pretty much why it is, I think.
Let's talk about Cage Warriors. It's been a breeding ground for a lot of European, Western European fighters in terms of, you look at some of the guys who've left, let's say, the last 5 or 6 years. Lee Chadwick and both Ross Houston went over to Bellator. You have guys like Mason Jones, Nicholas Dalby, Cal Penthrid, you know, they went to the UFC. Jai Herbert, you know, you had Chris Fishgold, Stevie Ray. How is it that they've been able to do that? But even with all these guys, they keep losing. And it's almost like a who's who of guys they lose. They keep putting on good cards. They keep, you know, replenishing the ranks for a small country in England. How do they do it that they can literally just go, all right, well, we've lost Mads Burrell. We've lost, Soren Bach. But, hey, we'll keep on going.
Yeah, that's pretty simple, I think. I mean, the fighters know when they do well in Cage Warriors, they have a good chance to go to either the UFC or to Bellator, you know. Cage Warriors has like 99 guys in the UFC already who signed from Cage Warriors to the UFC. So, I mean, those guys know if they are doing well, and they get noticed, you know. For example, the Morgan Charrier kid, the French guy who won the championship, the featherweight championship recently. Man, that guy got a following. It's crazy. I mean, if he defends his title once, I think he will definitely be a lock for going to the UFC, for example. Or even Bellator, you know. I don't know what he wants, but Bellator has already been in France, so they can put him on that card. So it's what he wants. You have Ian Garry, which is a crazy, crazy talented guy. You know, we will see him in the bigger leagues as well, I think. You got so many guys over there who do very well. I mean, also you have Nathaniel Frederick, who also won his championship, his title defense against Jamie Richardson most recently. And there is another guy who I forgot, who recently also defended his title in Manchester. Guy he fought against my countryman, against Gerardo Fanny. I don't know what his name again, but he's very good as well. He's from Manchester guy. He won a tournament, and he defended his title against my countryman. So I think he will go also to the UFC or to Bellator. But they keep having those talented fighters. They keep coming. So I think they are just – it's the perfect step to see where you're at in your MMA career. And if you do well there, you know you can go to the bigger leagues.
If you're just tuning in, ladies and gentlemen, once again, we got Marcel Dorf here on the show. We're talking all things, of course, European MMA. We're talking Cage Warriors, KSW, ACA, as it's the end of the year. Well, we're getting our guys here to talk about what's going on, a whole lot more. Great. Give me the grades here. I mean, for everything that went on. And look, this was a year which we talk about how the UFC and Bellator had to literally change stuff. I'm guessing a lot of these European promoters do the same thing. How do you grade each promotion for the way they handled COVID, the way they, you know, did fights, for everything that went on? How would you grade Cage Warriors, KSW, and ACA in terms of handling the fighters, handling the fights, and dealing with COVID?
I think honestly they all deserve definitely a 7, maybe a 7.5. They did what they could, you know, like a lot of promotions. I mean, Bellator started a little bit later, but they did as well what they could. UFC did very well, I think. All those organizations besides PFL who did it, really, in my opinion, but I'm not a PFL hater. I really like their format. But most organizations did very well. They're trying to get the they got the COVID testing and all. They were very helpful in stuff what fighters needed to be there to help them to. I mean, what can I say? I'm very happy with all organizations who tried to put on fights during this COVID era. It's been tough for all of them. They're losing money, you know, with all the things they have to do with testing and stuff. But they did it. Props to them, what they did. So nothing but respect.
KSW, I know, had a deal with DAZN, but it's now done. I know that Amazon is sniffing around the NFL. They want, you know, a big deal to get some NFL games. Same thing with soccer. You know, every Premier League, International League, you know, they're now talking streamlined deals because that's the way to go. With everything that's going on and with streaming services, especially the United States, picking up and wanting sports content, can you see that happening in 2021? I know that Cage Warriors has a deal with, you know, UFC Fight Pass, but that's Fight Pass here. Could any three organization turn around and go to Amazon or Netflix or Hulu and go, hey, we're ready to talk turkey here. We bring fans. We bring an international market. We love to, you know, be on the American market. Could any three of them make a deal where they're now streamlined their events on the United States and getting more money coming in?
That's difficult, man. I mean, Cage Warriors, like you said, has Fight Pass, and I think they're very happy with being on Fight Pass. You got KSW, where you can watch through Fight TV. Looks like they're also very happy in Fight TV. And then ACA had to just on their own website, you know, and for ACA, it's difficult, definitely now with those things going on with the U.S. fighters not getting fight in ACA. I don't think an American company will be interested to buy their rights, you know, definitely not with no Americans fighting there anymore. So, I mean, I don't see it happening, honestly, but hey, you never know, man. I mean, who would have think that the UFC would have a 5-year deal with Abu Dhabi, and they're having their pay-per-view every October on the Abu Dhabi prime time. So Bellator, with their deals they have done lately with CBS Sports. So, I mean, it can happen, but I don't know, man. I don't have too much insight about that. So I don't know, but it can happen, but I don't think it's likely.
We talked earlier this year, 2020, about Glory Kickboxing, where the fighters go. I know Glory tried to have an event, but there's always been some hiccups here. There's now talk of them having some more issues here. Is it safe to say that, you know, as we said, ACA, KSW, Cage Warriors, they're the ones right now who are looking at Glory going, okay, we're going to keep quiet. We're going to start, you know, slaying the weeds. How much would they benefit from Glory shutting down in terms of you'll have a lot of European fighters, a lot of kickboxers looking for events, and well, as you said, all three organizations sort of have their own market with Cage Warriors, you know, taking basically, you know, the European Western market of mostly, you know, the United Kingdom, Ireland, Scotland. You have KSW with Poland, maybe some Belgium, a little bit of France, you know, Sweden probably, and, well, ACA with the Russian market. Safe to say that they're looking at Glory right now going, okay, well, let's see what happens, and well, we might start breaking out a checkbook.
Yeah, I mean, Glorious. I think Glorious on the listen. This is not official or anything, so because I don't know, but I think Glorious on their last tails, man. Honestly, I mean, the Butler against Adegbuyi fight. They were obviously heavily hoping that Butler would win that fight because they wanted to make the winner of Butler, the winner of Rico against Jamal against Butler. You know, they hoped that Rico would win so they could Rico Butler 3 again. That didn't happen. And also think about ONE Championship was keep expanding their Muay Thai and kickboxing roster. And they have signed Marat Grigorian, for example, the champion of Glory. It's Glorious. I think Glory is in trouble also with their roster. And I know many people don't want to hear that because there are many kickboxing fans still. And but they're in trouble. I mean, even if one of your faces of the organization, Alex Pereira, is signing with LFA, and I know that he got permission from Glory to sign there for MMA fights, but it's a sign for me, you know, it's a sign for me that he probably wants to go over to MMA. And I know he has probably a fight lined up in Glory against Vakitov in January or February, but I don't know, man. I don't think the Cage Warriors, ACA, or KSW will benefit from that stuff. But I think Glorious is in trouble, although they say they are not. But that's just my gut feeling and the way things are going.
Last question before we let you go here. 2021, what are you hoping to see? I mean, you are a big fan of ACA, of KSW, of, you know, Cage Wars, because let's face it, you live over in Amsterdam, but for you, that's where the fights are. You know, UFC's, you and Bellator are both. Right now, because of COVID, a lot of things aren't happy, and they probably won't be traveling to overseas to Europe. Give me some fights you want to see. I mean, because you're a guy here that knows the European MMA market. What fights are you hoping to see from both KSW, Cage Warriors, and ACA that, in your mind, these are the fights to happen? These are the fights that basically are must-see for 2021.
There's a difficult question, man. I don't have any particular fights I want to see. I just want to see champions fighting number one contenders, champions fighting fighting in their own weight classes, just building up legacies, doing well, and maybe getting signed by bigger promotions even. You know, that's what I want to see. I want to see fights not getting canceled last moment because of Corona, COVID, you know. That's what I want to see. I'm not really that difficult in what I want to see for a fight. I just hope everybody stays safe and everybody can fight, and that we will have a great 2021. Although still this time is going on with what we're having in 2020. I don't think it will be over quick, but that's just what I hope. I don't have any in particular names I want to see fight that guy or that guy. But I just want to see competitive fights, good fights, champions versus number one contenders. And that's basically it, man.
I'm very happy, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, I give you, he is a man who knows everything about European mixed martial arts. And well, if he doesn't know it, he'll find out within seconds. I give you once again, all the way from Amsterdam himself, I give you, it's Marcel Dorf. Marcel, before I let you go, once again, where can the fans check you out? Where is the Twitter page, the websites, Instagram links? Like, where can fans hit you up at? And where can fans check out your work?
You can check out my work on MMADNA.nl. On Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and my personal account is BigMarcel24. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram on that account.
Marcel Dorf, ladies and gentlemen, once again, you can check him out. His MADNANL. It's also, he does work for Tapology. He's all over the place. As I said, this man here is the European master of mixed martial arts. We, once again, we got to wrap this up. So for Marcel Dorf, for Jimmy Rivera, this is Chris Carr saying we're out of here. Stay tuned, but we'll have a lot more action coming up to you. New Year's Day, we got some special guests. Can't tell you who it is yet. Only vote on Last Call. Last Call with the Alcohol. Only on, it is the Blue Wire Hustle Network. Stay tuned for more great action. I'm out of here. Enjoy the rest of the day, ladies and gentlemen.